This is a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one host boy, your number one fuck boy, the number one cuck boy. Fuck, blah, fuck, blah, fuck, blah, blah. Joining me, as always, in the High and Mighty studios is the nearly silent co-host, Arthur Gabrus. Arthur, give him a shout-out. All right. He was silent this time. Also joining me is longtime listener, first-time guest. I'm going to just pimp you into being a fan. Paul Briganti. Give it up for Paul.
Hi.
Hi, everyone. Bud. How are you?
Good. I'm good. That was just as good as listening to it, like being here and just staring at your dog's eyes.
I have a real hard time with it. My upstairs neighbor finally, like, he read this article in me about, on me in LA Times where it references that I host a podcast out of my house.
Yeah.
Whoa! Artie just got tangled up in a wire and almost took the whole fucking... It is a professional setup we have here. Will you chill, bud? Go outside. Go find mom.
And was your neighbor just like, oh, thank God.
Well, you're my neighbor was like, oh, so that's what happens down there. He had no way to figure out what... To him, he's just hearing a muffled guy screaming. And then I also do VO auditions from here, too, so he probably hears like, it's me, Pippi! You know, just doing character voices. It makes a way more sense. And he's like, and how many times a day do you beat off? I'm like 12. He's like, oh, okay. I thought you guys had a fucking ape exhibit down there.
I feel for that guy or person
that poor
or family.
Guy.
Yeah.
He's dealing with some real shit up there. As always, if you rate me 5 stars and roast me in the comments, I will read it on air. And you know that. You know that, Briganti. So we're going to get into it right now. So this first review is called Namir Sawney. Oh, it's by Namir Sawney, called A Great Podcast. John Gabras, he added 3 H's, talks about his racist beliefs disguised in innocuous topics such as sandwiches and movies from the 80s. Listen to John defend his intelligence, saying things like, most people think I'm dumb guy at first. Indeed, John is of above average intelligence, but uses it memorizing Seagal quotes, maps of New Jersey, and the nuances of Heroes of the Storm. Love the podcast. You're the best. 5 out of 5. Yo, fuck you. Nothing you said offended me except for maps of New Jersey. Who gives a fuck about New Jersey? I'm from Long Island. God damn it. My brand is off. It's not landing.
Yeah, you got to refine it a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, I got to make sure people know.
Yeah.
God. Or unless that's part of the roast. Ooh, subtle.
Oh, yeah. That's how you really get to you.
Isn't it funny when like a friend of yours who doesn't do comedy or like your girlfriend's friend who's like, oh, he's hysterical, and they just like are the type of person that lies. And that's their idea of joking. It's like, you want to go to the beach? He's like, no. You're like, oh, he's like, oh, I'm skin man. I do want to go.
I heard of someone who like ran with that like way too long, and it was like about a serious thing too. I can't remember the person, thankfully, but it was just like, oh, my girlfriend's dead or something. Oh. It was just like, oh, I'm so sorry. It's like, it happened. Like, and they got like more specific and everything. And then they're like, oh, I'm just kidding. Like after like they gave the emotional like pat on the back for it. And it was just like, fuck that person. That's
right.
The worst
that's
thing
lying
ever
is
do.
Not lying does not equal comedy.
Yeah.
Often, I think I've said this before on the podcast, but often when someone says, you're going to like my friend, they're really funny. If they're not a comedian, it means they're just like a jerk.
Yeah.
They're usually like an asshole. The guy who they think is really funny. He's like, you got to meet Dennis, man. And then Dennis is like, let's break bottles. And everyone's like laughing as he throws bottles at like a fucking
They're
bus.
Just like a weirdo. They're just like a sociopathic freak.
Yeah. He's like, if he didn't have this group of friends, he would be arrested. Yeah. But in this group of friends, it's like, he's our wacky friend. Okay, here we go. This is from Pat Carusoni, a fellow Ginzo. Painful. High and Mighty is all I can listen to during marathon training. It's the only thing painful enough to mask the discomfort in my legs. High and Mighty is to marathon training as garlic and olive oil is to broccoli Rob. John Gabrus doesn't even deserve a witty misspelling of his name. Wow, Pat. Wow. Holy shit, that hits hard. Mostly, I just can't believe I have a listener that does marathon training. Do you like Broccoli Rob? Are you a fan?
Yeah, I do a lot.
Of
course. I was listening to one of the
Finelli?
Sandwich.
Because you're talking about Broccoli Rob. So, oh, yeah, this must be a really fresh review. That went up like two days ago.
It's a media reference, for sure. Yeah, Broccoli Rob's amazing. There's so many... Yeah, there's a place called Gaetano's near my hometown.
What's your hometown?
Stratford, Connecticut.
Ooh, Stratford on Avon.
There was a Shakespeare theater, but then it burned down really badly.
So
the reason that
my
why
high school lacrosse
team
burned it down for kicks.
I don't know anything. But yeah, there's this place called Gaetano's that's like pretty amazing. That was like
my hero.
Yeah,
and then
yeah,
Don's
yeah.
was maybe no Dante's. I was like, also Gaetano's. I'm sure there's 12 listeners of this podcast that their favorite deli is Gaetano's, and
yeah.
none of them are in Stratford, Connecticut.
That's true. Yeah.
Gaetano's is a great name.
It's a great yeah.
It's
yeah,
a great
yeah,
name.
Yeah.
I mean, we got Paulo Briganti in the house. Wow. Yeah. This is two Ginzos in a row episodes. Yeah.
It's fun. We won't go too far into the Italian shit, but it's like, yeah, I'm have a huge kind of Italian family, but I just don't. I'm the black sheep, I guess.
Exactly.
Those people. But I still am that, you know, makes me feel kind of homesick to hear that shit and see that shit, you know.
Talking about portion sizes is like what like 11 people tweeted back about. Like 11 people with visibly Italian names were like, all my dad talks about is the biggest chicken parm in the neighborhood. He doesn't even care if it tastes good. All right, here's one last review before we get into it. This is why Trump won. Oh, boy. By Rana420X. Okay, it's not as hacky as your, yeah, can't be as hacky as your name is. John Gingrich, much like his father Newt, will never pass up an opportunity to participate in some good old-fashioned dog whistle racism. He uses the term Strong Island so often I could only assume it's some kind of call to arms for the alt-right. His only redeeming quality is that his unapologetic gluttony and opium addiction will no doubt send him to an early grave. 5 stars.
Oh,
holy shit. Do you know what's really funny is that I never read these before, and I'm like, and I gotta get away from being called alt-right, and
because
I don't want listeners to listen for the wrong I think anyone who actually listens knows.
Yeah.
But I feel weird because now I'm starting to think, like, if some fucking creepo Reddit fucking nerd reads this, he's like, alt-right, racist dog whistles, I'm in.
And mostly
it's just me making, like, shitty black and Jewish jokes.
Yeah, I feel like if you don't listen, on the surface it could seem. But, like, if you listen for, like, a little bit longer, you know that it's all, like, just joking around.
Wait, obviously. While I have you here, does that mean if you just briefly meet me, you might think that about me as well? And it takes you
like
knowing
know you
for 8 years and working.
Still then, in that case, like maybe knowing you for a long time is not long enough to know that you're not like a racist person.
Holy shit, I've never been considered such an acquired taste.
No, but the thing of when you read these reviews, you can really hear you. Hearing, I think it's good that you don't read them for the beforehand, because you can hear you coming like to terms and like winding the path of actually.
I'm like,
reading
oh fuck!
It.
The second I hear like racist dog whistle, all right, hold on, let's just do one more just for kicks to get some done. Headgum's biggest mistake by Miles Bond. You know him from Background in Happy Endings and The Bathroom at Taco Bell. Long Island Railroad conductor John G. leads us through all the mistakes he made while trying to assemble a career as an MTV showgirl. We can't help but frown as that guy from one episode of Bones spins weed-smoked tangents into a desperate plug for his own CISO original series. Also, you can get into Will Hines' Advanced Study Harold. 10 out of 10, the sandwich episode was bomb as hell. Holy shit, Miles Bond. That one hits hard.
That was good.
That was
he
good.
He did some IMDb research, too.
Yeah, he has.
Like
he knows
Bones and everything. Yeah.
A couple of deep cuts. The fact that he or she knows who Will Hines is.
Yeah.
That's pretty strong.
Yeah.
The only thing that hurts the hardest is that I was never even given a CISO original. I'm not even good enough to have a fucking CISO show.
You pitched him five times.
This is career assassination in quotes because I might just burn a bridge with CISO. But that was like the longest running bit I play in a weekly poker game, and the longest running bit was. So Gabrus, when are you getting that CISO development deal? I hear the head of CISO is coming to play you heads up and no limit hold'em. If you win, you get a CISO deal. Like it was just like how I couldn't get a CISO deal. And it's like all these comics and writers and who make a lot of money and do well. And they're like, oh, I don't like this bit. Oh, well, how could you have possibly known, Miles Bond, that right before we started officially recording, I was stressing about career at the ball. Oh, there's no way you could have known that, Miles Bond. All right. Let's enough with the reviews. Guys, shithead listeners, as always, if you rate me 5 stars and roast me in the comments, I will read it on air. You could truly hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
Take this opportunity to hurt my feelings. I'm so desperate for 5-star reviews that I'm willing to shatter my ego weekly just to fucking get a couple of 5-star reviews. And honestly, I'm not even
Does it work?
Top 150 podcasts. It's like if you typed in top 100 podcasts with a title with a name high in the title, I would be like 80th. Behind Higher Learning Podcast, a podcast.
Can I imagine there's a lot of high podcast names?
Yeah, that's fair. No, thank you. There's got to be over 1,000. I'm in the top 10%.
Yeah, there you go.
Paul, so we talked a lot about, as always with guests that I'm friends with, we talked a lot about what topic we'd want to do, and we talked about maybe it's Catholic, maybe it's Italian stuff, maybe it's deli stuff. But the thing we landed on was, since you're my first possibly actual director, not someone who just says that and is a bartender. Like, I know you're a director because you have directed me a handful of
times.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah.
So you at least those three times, I don't know what you do the rest of your life.
Yeah.
But a few times I've seen you sit in a chair and look at a monitor and all that. Yeah. So I wanted to talk, because that was something I wanted to be growing up, something I'm obsessed with is movies.
Really?
So yeah.
So when you were younger, you were into filmmaking and you wanted to be a director?
I didn't know what I wanted to be. I wanted to work in movies and I never really understood how.
Yeah.
I didn't even know about directors really when I first started watching movies.
Yeah.
Do you remember the moment when you realized like, oh, there's like people behind these working on them by any chance?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was a weird kid, as I'm sure we all were, had a weird side to us. And
I'm sure as anyone who's seen you in person now would understand.
Is aware,
I'm a weird adult.
I was weird. I was really actually into editing as a kid. Like, I had like a weird OCD tick where when I would like see movies, I would like know, I would guess when like the edit was going to happen.
Oh, wow.
And it would totally ruin my experience of like watching movies and... But I was really into just like when the time would come to like cut to the next person's reaction or like
Holy
when to like
shit.
The emotion thing. That sounds like a pretentious brag, but I don't think it is. I think it's just a pretentious weird.
It's more
fact.
like you're learning the pacing.
Yeah,
of movies.
I think that's what it is. It's like when people watch like tennis matches or something, and they know it's going to be like tennis, but they know it's going to be a foul.
Or just watching football, someone's like, "This is definitely a play action. Play action here." It's the same thing, but
right. Yeah,
it was there's just a like touch watching. Of OCD to it.
Oh,
it's
sure.
Like,
oh my god, so much.
600 times a movie.
Just like now.
Your parents are like, okay, Paul, here's another baseball mitt. Do you want to go outside and do something?
Yeah. I'm just watching like Clifford or something. It's like now.
You're like super analyzing Clifford. All right, now, cut, now, pan, wipe,
filmmaking,
star wipe.
Filmmaking, brilliant.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
So did you understand that that was considered editing?
No, I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
Yeah, I thought that was... just filmmaking and making movies. And
right.
I was like a pretty, I think I was a pretty bossy child. So that leads to directing in a way. Because you kind of just get your like weird bossy fix out of like directing and like running a set and talking to people. And I've since gone less in that bossy type of
But you kind of
urge.
Have to, there's like an, I mean, any one of these jobs in the business, you kind of there has to be an ego to it, but director most of all,
because
even in moments you have to just be like, I'm not positive, but I think a decision needs to be made.
yeah. I feel like that's like so much of it is just making a decision,
right? The ability to make a
decision. Yeah.
Or to know who to listen to. When
who has the best. The most invested in the quality of the thing and sort of like who to listen to, but that was when I was younger. I would do that stuff and then I'd make movies with my friends and my dad and stuff like that.
Well, all right, that's awesome. Wait, so you started because I'll talk about myself for the next hour.
Yeah,
you can try to get a word in if you'd like, but
I'll go to the bathroom.
Yeah, you go ahead.
One,
you
can
head home. We got it. I got your name. I can put it on the thing. It's fine. Just make sure you retweet it when it comes out. I remember when like my dad first mentioned like, oh, I really like this. I forget what it was. I think the example I've used previously is like, oh, Goodfellas is really a cool movie when I'm like 10 or 11 or whatever. And I'm like, my dad's like, oh, you should watch After Hours because it's funny and you like comedy stuff. And I'm like, oh, cool. And I watch it. I'm like, oh, After Hours is really weird and fun. And my dad goes, it's the same director. And I'm like, oh, I didn't even know, like, I knew people directed movies, but I didn't understand that, like, they had that. I thought it was just like, hey, this movie needs to get made. Here's nine guys.
Yeah, which kind of happens.
Which
kind
of happens when you learn it.
A lot of them, There's, but, like, a handful of those who are good and lucky enough to, like, create a body of work.
Right.
So to speak. But, yeah.
And then you learn that, and you're like, holy shit, I start really liking this. And something I was just recently on the Howard Stern wrap-up show, and Jimmy Iovine, whatever his name is, from the Defiant Ones, was the guest, and he just kept talking about all these projects that he was behind.
Oh,
like,
shit.
He's like, he recorded John Lennon's first album, he did Stevie Nicks, he did Tom Petty, he did fucking Born to Run. Wow. He did, like, all these insane, and you're like, oh my God, there's a common denominator in, like, 12
all these
of the
amazing
most
things.
And
then
it's like, when you learn about that, then if you're a real music fan, you must be like, I wonder what else this guy produced.
And you're
very curious. So it's kind of like when you learn who directors, screenwriters, or even, like, cinematographers are.
Oh, for sure.
Like, when I learned who Jan de Bont was, I was like, this guy's direct, like, he's fucking been the DP for, like, 12 of my favorite movies. And directed Speed, which is great.
Really?
Yeah, directed Speed, which is interesting.
Was that the beginning or the end of his directing career?
I think he did a few more after that. He did Speed 2.
Cruise Control.
He has one other good one in there too, besides Speed. He has another one that's like a
I find it so fascinating to just do the research, the IMDb research of directors.
There's
such a story in their paths.
Love just seeing, like, wow, how did you get
it's
this
like
one?
Marley and Me, you know, Rumble in the Bronx, and then you see something that, like, makes complete sense, and then they just, like, completely fell off.
Yeah, or you see, like, three in a row that Owen Wilson's in, latched on for a little bit.
And
I remember when I started learning that, I was like, oh, that's so sweet. So there's more to just, like, this movie has Van Damme in it. It's more like who's and I think that early, like the movies I was watching when I was a kid, it didn't matter who directed it. It was like, who did the stunt coordination and which guy took his shirt off as the lead?
What's the soundtrack?
Like? Yeah, exactly. That's all that mattered to me. Is Tom Cruise in it? I'm in. You know? But as you get older, you're like, learn that shit. And that's so funny. What age were you started? Did you start making stuff?
Well, what do you mean about stuff? Like actual...
Like when you were saying, like, you were making movies with your friends.
Oh,
like,
well, when I was, like, a little kid, my dad had one of those, like, big... shoulder camcorders
VHS. Like a full VHS load in.
And he, I think he got it as, like, a gift, as a birth gift when I was born. Like, my grandfather gave it to him.
To, like, take videos of
the kid. So then he, much to his credit, he would, like, make movies with me and shit. And when I wanted to do that, so I would just be like, I want to make Home Alone. What the fuck, you know?
I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, and he would be like, "All right, let's make Home Alone then." And
so you would shoot Home Alone at the house.
Yeah,
and
with my dad, I would act in it with him, playing like Joe Pesci. What's the other guy's name? The Harry
Daniel Stern.
Daniel Stern.
Harry
yeah,
Marv, yeah.
Because like as a kid, you're just like, I don't know. I just saw a movie. I don't want to make the movie.
Yeah.
So I did it with him, and then I did little things like that with friends, and then. When I got to high school, my friend, do you know Travis Helwig?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's like one of my best high school friends.
I didn't know you guys, I knew you guys were buds. I didn't know you guys were that old of buds.
Yeah, that's
so
we go
Travis
way
is
back
what, in. Like, head writer for Conover's show? For
yeah, for Adam Ruins Everything. Yeah, Adam Everything. Yeah, and he wrote.
And future guest of this podcast, we were supposed to, we miscommunicated, but he's supposed to come on to talk about Pokemon.
Oh, God. That's going to be a long show. He's obsessed with Pokemon.
I know. That's what made me. I was like, how are adults obsessed with this? Let's talk.
But yeah, we made like little films and stuff, which I'm sure what kids are, all kids are doing now.
Right,
you know?
Now it feels like.
It's a lot easier to do it, and there's just so many kids who are.
Yeah, we used to use my dad's like bullshit camera to make a show we called Studio 53. And it was like the sketches made no sense.
So it was like a sketch. It was like SNL.
Yeah, like, but we didn't shoot any like, and we were really into. This must have been when we were like 16 because we were so into. This is really offensive. We were so into two things. One thing we were really into was Monty Python. Everything Monty Python.
Yeah,
we're like, just be weird. Like we'd always introduce sketches from like standing on field goal posts and stuff like the weirdest places we can get.
Yeah.
And then the other thing we were obsessed with, and we did one whole sketch about it was. this book that one of my friend's moms had who was a nurse, and it was like a book of deformities, like people with deformities. And we would like thumb through it when we're drunk and be like, do voices for the people. And it's like, that's just like the meanest 15-year-old boy shit in the world.
Yeah, but 15-year-old boy, like you get a pass. Yeah, I think
I've grown up.
Yeah.
just be happy. I will someday be cursed with a deformity, of course, because I deserve it.
And have a really funny voice to go with it.
I can't wait to scream, "Mommy, can I have a hot dog?" That was like the big voice. We would always do the line we would say in different voices is, "Mommy, can I have a hot dog?" Oh, God. Wait, you're telling your origin story as a filmmaker, and I'm learning my origin story as like a bully lunatic.
Yeah, I mean, it was similar but different.
Right, you guys are making like the dandelion diaries, and Travis is blowing the little dandelion up. So you guys started making shit in high school?
Yeah. We made just like short comedy films, and each one would get like bigger and more longer and grandiose, and we thought it was really great, and we would really make our friends like come over and watch it and like sit down. Like, we were such pain in the asses.
That's really
for
fun,
sure.
Yeah.
It was fun, but like, it's like a 40-minute movie. Like,
wait, you were making four? Yeah. Are you editing in camera?
No, I was cutting it on my computer on like an old pro, like consumer kind of Sony Vegas or something like
that. Oh, that's awesome. Oh, yeah. You are a little younger than me.
Yeah. I'm 30. So, yeah, it was.
The technology was
barely there.
We were editing in camera.
In the camera, yeah. I did that to you like in middle school and stuff before you were... Because once you could edit like on computers and stuff, it was like you were...
Holy shit, yeah. We could do more than one take.
Yeah, you put music to this and it synchronizes with the thing. Like, that's huge.
Yeah, I didn't learn Avid till my freshman year of college. And then I was just like... I started editing all the comedy group's short films and then started directing them as I got older.
Oh, that's cool.
I
didn't know that you did that in college.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
And I thought that's what I was going to do. And then as we're learning, as we spoke about before this, I don't have any ambition, drive, or work ethic.
Yeah. I mean, doing a podcast, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
It's hard work.
I do a podcast that specifically requires no research, and it is just two people talking to each other. Yeah. I'm starting to see the writing on the wall of like, what are my chances here?
Yeah.
What kind of shit were you into? Like, what was like... When you were saying you were getting bigger and bigger and more grandiose, were you like, shoot one thing, and like, then you're like, ooh, next time we do one, we should get like
We made like mini three-act movies for the most part.
Wow, that's fucking awesome. Not even like just one scene.
No, like big, not big at all, but just like
40 minutes story is big for like doing your free time.
Yeah. We would do it just like all weekends and nights, and we would just convince our... Travis sort of, I was sort of a floater kid in high school, and he had more access to like the cool kids because he was like more athletic than me. So he would get like the cool football or soccer kid to like be in the movie. You know, sort of one of his hustles, like get like the cool kids to be in it. And then I would just be like, all right, they're here. Go. Let's do it.
Man, that's a real world's tallest midget competition when Travis is the cool one in a duo.
I know. It's so true. It's so true.
Travis is only the cool one because it's you and him.
He had just finished Accutane, so his face
so he
was like
totally killing
it.
It
was great, yeah.
Yeah, his depression was over the Accutane. That shit, Doughboys talked about this on one of their podcasts, but one of the side effects of Accutane is truly psychosis.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Psychotic behavior.
It's like pregnancy. If you can't use it if you're pregnant or something
right,
like
it's
that.
Like so intense and debilitating.
Yeah, it really fucks you up, but you know, if you're willing to do that, it's a high price.
It doesn't fuck you up as much as having acne does in high school. Having acne in high school will fuck you way harder.
Yeah. So yeah, we made like a bunch of movies, and then we kind of broke off, and I went to film school, and he went to real school. And
did you go to SVA?
Yeah. I went there for 2 years, and it was great. I mean,
for a 2-year program, or just didn't finish?
It was a 4-year program.
Okay, so
well, basically, I didn't have I was just I'm not a smart person, like book smart, or like I don't completely. I made up a narrative in my head because someone had told me at SVA that like if you if you don't go to class, it's okay as long as you're working on something. And so for some reason, I just like assumed that was true. And I didn't ask any of my teachers. And I made like a short film that was like, it's not good, but it was a bigger short film at that age level, right, or whatever. Yeah, yeah. And I had a really big ego about it because I was in film school and that's like a requirement. So I made a big short film and I was like, oh, I'm just going to show them the short when I'm done with this.
Oh, God, this is making me so happy. This is so fucking funny.
And I came like towards the end of the year and my teacher was just like, where have you been?
Were these film classes you were skipping too?
Yeah, film writing classes. It was all film classes. And I was like, well, someone told me. And as I was like saying it, I realized that like, it wasn't anyone of
when
note.
When has this excuse ever worked? Yeah. No, someone told me I was allowed to do this.
And the lesson from there was like, well, maybe if I went up to them before the thing,
right,
and been like, hey, I might miss a few classes. Is it okay? They probably would have been a lot easier
on me.
Yeah,
I'm working on a film.
Yeah.
Like, that's great. Good
yeah,
work.
Like,
yeah.
You know, and show them a little bit of it, include them in the process.
Right, right, right.
But I didn't. I just kind of went ham on the short and then and then showed up at the end and was like, here's my short. And they were like, great, well, you missed 10 classes. You can't you have to retake this school year or you can just leave.
Oh.
And so I was like, I think I'm just going to leave because, again, I had a big ego and I just left because I was kind of getting some like editing work on the side.
Oh.
Is New York
already in college? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Because
you can like go on Craigslist and get like a
there's
night editor
yeah,
job.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some. I was at the Onion. I was editing or not assistant editing for the Onion. And they did a lot of like night stuff where you just like ingest
load
footage.
All night. Yeah. I used to load for VH1 because
oh really
yeah because you got paid $100 yeah. a day as a PA but you got $25 an hour as a mm-hmm. loader. So if you
no one wants to do it,
no one wants to do it.
Sucks.
It's literally just
yeah.
working from 8 p.m. till 8 a.m. and I would just work a whole shift as a PA and then
yeah.
like, stay for 4 hours just for $100.
Yeah,
like, just putting yeah. a tape in, making sure you hit what record on
yeah.
both things,
yeah,
and
yeah,
then
yeah,
just
yeah,
slowly
yeah.
ingesting it.
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah. So I did that. I was doing that. I was doing like odd job editing work. So I was like, fine, I don't need this. I can support myself. And then I started like temping and doing editing work.
While what did your family think at this point? I'm curious. Like, they, know, were they? Have they always been like they're supportive enough
yeah.
to let you go to SVA, which is not a cheap
yeah.
school? And
yeah, I have an interesting like family dynamic because my grandfather and his wife, my grandmother, they came from like Italy and they were like depression people. So they were super hard on my dad to be like, you got to get a job.
Right.
You need to support your family. You can't pursue arts. And he was a musician. So he kind of.
What did he play?
He's a guitarist and bassist and he's great. He's like a very, very talented musician. But I think he always regretted sort of not going full 100% at
it. Oh, that's exactly what you need in a
yeah.
as an artist, because that
yeah.
means you got a full support.
Yeah,
to,
yeah. absolutely
maybe,
supportful.
Unfortunately, living vicariously through you is like the negative if it swings too far.
Yeah, then, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's
yeah.
like, hey man, you
want
to try
do
some
whatever
weed?
You want?
I'm 15. It's like, gotta open your mind.
Yeah. Yeah,
so he was supportive.
Yeah, he was just like whatever you need to do, like we're like to an extent. Like he wasn't throwing me money.
Yeah, he
anything.
Wasn't like floating you.
No, no, no,
like,
no. He was
you
like
you can go to film school.
Yeah.
You can drop out of film
yeah,
school.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was like, if you drop out, you gotta get a job, and he knew that I was getting some work and stuff like
yeah.
that. So he supported me in emotional support.
Which
for
is
sure.
fucking super important.
It's a lot. Yeah. It
yeah.
was it was like honestly, like after the phone call I had with him to tell him I was dropping out, like he was just like, okay, yeah, whatever you need to do. Like I almost like cried after that phone call.
That's amazing.
It's a hard thing as a parent, especially someone who was raised by such a hard ass
right.
Italian.
Well, I think that's like pretty much a lot of our generation is our parents.
Why we are this way.
Yeah.
Cause, yeah, yeah.
Or,
yeah.
or like I wasn't, I had none
had
of that
tougher,
real support because
right? yeah, yeah.
my dad is like a shit rolls downhill, was a yeah. shit rolls downhill type of guy where he's
yeah.
like, my dad was an asshole to me.
I'm an
my
asshole,
dad
yeah.
hit me. I hit you.
Yeah.
My dad
yeah.
was an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I
yeah,
think
yeah.
our generation for
yeah.
or either go like the parents are like, let me help you out here
yep.
or me, like, I think you go, fuck this whole thing. I'm doing whatever I want.
Yeah.
I'm not living
yeah,
like
that's
you
true.
Guys.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
As a matter of fact, my parents like accidentally supported me by not supporting me.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
then I sort of went, oh, fuck you guys. And
I
then
don't
I also
have
realized
it.
I didn't
yeah.
need them.
You have the ultimate freedom of just like doing whatever. You don't right. care if you've already disappointed them.
Yeah. They're
so
already
whatever.
Like,
yeah.
I don't understand what you're doing. Why yeah. are you moving to New York City? It's a half hour away from where we live.
Yeah.
And I was like, I need to be there. And it's like, what is this comedy show
that's
you're doing?
That's crazy yeah. that they were like, it's a half hour from where we live. Why are you doing? They actually
yeah,
like,
they were like,
opinion.
It makes no sense. And I was like,
man.
I'm gone. I hate
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Good for you. Good for you.
Yeah.
Man. That's
I
awesome.
Mean, it is in hindsight, what I should have done was lived on Long Island for as long
right.
as possible.
Commuted, yeah,
commuted
right.
made a bunch of money. I would have had to work less. You know what
I
mean?
Know,
I wouldn't
man.
Have had to take shitty jobs.
I'm a believer in diving in. Because you would have gotten, there's a chance that you would have gotten sucked into the comfort over there. And they
oh,
would,
yeah.
They would have made it
if you don't
easy
have a reason
you.
To be in the city that
yeah.
day, you
yeah.
would just stay
you won't
home.
Go.
Yeah. And it's like, I'm living at my mom's house.
Yeah. Because those lonely days in New York or wherever your proverbial New York is, are, yeah. is very important to have.
Yes. Because it's sort like, of like your growth day.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's like, if I may be an ex-meathead for a minute, it's your muscles grow on your rest day, dude.
Yeah.
Abs are built in the
true.
Kitchen. You know yeah, what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You need to fucking bust your ass 4 out of 7 days a yeah. week and then 3 of them repair
just
and
just kind
of
have the
yeah.
silence and yeah.
Yeah.
So that's good you did that. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I it was a big point of contention.
Yeah.
And actually I jumped the gun because I was dating Tiffany then and we were maybe talking about moving in together, but she couldn't move out of her house for a while because she was like a little more pinned by student
yeah.
loans and,
yeah,
and
yeah,
she
yeah,
likes
yeah,
her
yeah.
family.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I'm sorry, but then I'm moving out to with guy friends. And that was
yeah.
like a big problem. Cause,
yeah.
yeah. But I'm glad I did it.
Yeah.
And she's, I'm sure, glad I did it too because
yeah.
I had 1 year of living with
the
dudes.
Weirdness. Yeah. Just being a weird 20 something year old.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was a PA and hustling my ass off. And then a friend, Kevin Marr, who I'll give a shout out, great guy, comedy writer, was like, I'm like, what did you do? He's like, dude, when you're this young, he had kids. He's like, when you're this young, you need to. I'm like, I just want to do. I like submitted to be a writer on Best Week Ever, and mm-hmm. the head writer at Best Week Ever was like, why do you want to be a writer? I'm like, because I'm funny and it's better than being a PA. And she was like, that's not
no,
enough.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, yeah. What do you need to hear to be a writer on Best Week Ever? I was so pissed at this woman.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I took
yeah.
my Kevin, who was a writer on the show and who I really bonded with, and I was like, what? He's like, dude, get out of here. He's like,
yeah.
leave this job. They're never going to see you as
oh,
anything but a PA.
You submitted as a writer when you were a PA.
When I was a
yeah,
PA
yeah,
on
yeah.
it.
No
he's
way.
Like, no, they're
no
never going to do that. He's
yeah.
like, you're funnier than half of the writers and producers in there. You're just raw. He's like, leave. He's like, look, you can get unemployment because this is a freelance
yeah.
job. He's
yeah.
like, you can get it for almost 6 months. You can make slightly less. Like, literally, it was like $20 less than my actual paycheck a week when I
yeah.
got He's like, and you don't have to do
it's
anything.
Great, yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And
were you doing UCB stuff while
I
you
was
were...
doing UCB stuff at
yeah,
this time?
Yeah,
so I was already in classes.
Yeah,
I maybe
yeah.
just got put on a Harold team.
Yeah.
And he was like, just leave. And in 6 months, just have done something that makes you happy when you look back on it.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't even care if it's watch 2 seasons of your favorite show. Just have completed something.
Yeah.
And it was like
you
the best
have
advice.
Said a little bit higher than
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like,
just like but, watch TV. Like.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, cool. Yeah. He's like, I wish Netflix existed
yeah,
then. I would have
yeah,
fucking.
Yeah.
You know what? Actually, I'm glad it didn't.
No, that is really good advice.
Yeah.
Because yeah. you are arrested a little when he, you know, he had kids and stuff. Like,
right.
he's a writer on a show, which was like a cool show, but still, it's like.
Right.
He didn't.
He
didn't have a choice, really.
Right. He had to make money and shit.
Yeah.
So when he came to that, I was like, oh, sick. And then I took like living in my Brooklyn apartment, living off of rice and beans
yeah.
from
yeah.
Bonita, mm-hmm. and just fucking hustling, shooting videos
yeah.
with friends, writing Spanx,
yeah.
writing sketch shows,
yeah,
doing
yeah, yeah,
weird
yeah.
improv sets. And
yeah.
stuff. And it's like, holy shit, that's like when. That was an insane time.
Yeah, did you what you were you in like a group or something like a video group? Like I remember I saw like your videos that you made. Didn't you and Justin like did stuff?
Yeah,
and
we and Justin did something. There was like this director that I lived with for a little while. This guy who was directing stuff named Tommy, who was kind of like
yeah.
ended up being an insane lunatic. Like
okay.
like sawed the legs off our table and switched them out and was like, I think it's better this way. And we were like, what? And then we'd been giving him money for a electric bill that he was paying every month.
Yeah.
And he never paid it, and then he's like,
oh, no.
The landlord is like, you know, you guys yeah. have been 1/3 down on rent. This guy was like scamming the shit
yeah,
out of us,
yeah,
but he was
yeah,
like,
yeah.
yo, let me know. I shoot a video as a promo for your sketch show, and we're
yeah,
like, sick, dude.
Yeah,
no,
yeah,
just like
yeah.
caught up in the New York magic
yeah.
of like, we're artists, and then all of a sudden it's like, wait, but I've been busting my ass to pay rent, and you're
right,
not
right,
even
right.
paying rent. He was a dude who got thrown out of UCB for hacking the computer system and giving himself class credits.
Whoa.
Like giving himself like putting himself in a level 4 and not paying for it. He gave himself free ASCAT tickets for a year before they even caught on. He would just make he figured out how to get into the computer and would make a reservation under his name for ASCAT and then take girls, like take different girls.
Oh no, that's the end of it for me. Yeah. Cuz like a little bit of me was like, "Oh, that's pretty cool," but then just like showing off and using it to like take girls.
Hindsight he was like a mega scum.
So
you start making you're in college.
Yeah.
And what kind of shit... Oh, let's go back a little bit. What made you want to make movies? Like, besides your autism towards editing? Did you, like, have a favorite movie when you were a kid? Or did you have, like, a...
It's funny, because, like, when I was a kid, I was more into comedy stuff. And then as I got older, I was more into, like, actual filmmakers and movies. When I was a kid, I was in... I really liked, like, Mel Brooks movies and shit like that.
Oh, hell yeah. Spaceballs is huge.
Spaceballs is amazing. Yeah. Young Frankenstein.
Fuck yeah.
Even the weird... I would just like go to the library and like rent these movies that it's like, oh yeah, Mel Brooks movie, sure, but like High Anxiety.
That's the Vertigo parody.
Yeah, they're like Alfred Hitchcock jokes and shit.
Yeah. Is Mel Brooks also History of the World?
Yeah. So I was really into that stuff. They were sort of my like. You know, like I don't really listen to Green Day anymore, but they were sort of like, he was sort of like my Green Day. I was like, sort of like,
got you just, into
yeah,
music.
I got me into it. Yeah.
Like a couple of hot singles. And then you're like, oh, what's the rest of Dookie like? And you're like, I'm out.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
American Idiot.
Yeah. So I
went through like that same phase where I would go to Blockbuster every Friday and rent two movies.
Yeah.
And it would always be like,
yeah, it's whatever
from the
it is.
Director of this other movie I rented last week that I liked, or my dad's like, the best advice, the one I always give for my dad was like, we watched Clockwork Orange, me and my friends, and we're like, holy shit, this broke my mind open.
Yeah.
So I told my dad, he was like kind of a pop culture guy, I was like, what other movies should I watch if I like Clockwork Orange? He's like, oh, you gotta see Last House on the Left. And that was incorrect. Like, we watched Last House on the Left, and it's just like a Wes Craven slasher where a woman bites a dude's cock off, and you're like, dad, I meant more like, that's not what I liked about Clockwork Orange, was just the violence. What a misread. Like, those dudes who, like, when they're like, I love Fight Club, you're like, yeah, it's pretty cool. He's like, brutal fight scenes.
Right,
you're like,
all right. Like,
cool, yeah.
And you're like, yeah, I guess so.
You're not wrong.
Yeah. But then I was into, like Airplane and...
The Zucker Brothers movies were my favorite.
They're so funny. Like, they I think there's a difference between like Mel Brooks movies and those movies where like I feel like Airplane and the Zucker Brothers movies like kind of hold up.
Yes.
This is such a great I don't know. I'm probably pissing somebody off somewhere. But
For sure. But the Zazz movies hold up a little bit better, and I think it's because it's not a parody of the time as much.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah. They were kind of just like paired like topical movies. Right, yeah, that's a really good point. Mel Brooks movies for sure.
Yeah.
And the Zucker Brothers is just like. Just Looney Tunes,
It's just like absurdist. I like really late stuff, Zucker Brothers stuff too. That people have written
Scary
off.
Movie 3 or something. Didn't they do Scary?
Yeah, I think
three?
They did the first. They did one of the scary them. Movies.
Yeah,
but before that, even was
High
like
School High.
Dracula Dead and Loving It.
I love Dracula Dead and Loving It. That was
and
so
my
good.
Favorite is fucking
oh, wait,
Wrongfully
wait, no, no, wait.
Accused.
Wait,
the Fugitive.
Sorry, Dracula Dead and Loving It is a Mel Brooks movie.
Is it?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. Yeah. I believe you. But Leslie Nielsen's in it.
He is. That was like the big.
Oh, that was a
crossover.
Weird crossover. Yeah, holy shit.
Gotta
give
props to Mel Brooks, you know.
Of course.
But were you saying Wrongfully Accused?
Wrongfully Accused is the Fugitive parody one.
Leslie Nielsen. Yeah, of course.
And it's like, it's got some of the best jokes. Spy Hard's great. Wrongfully Accused. And like Hot Shots, the Hot Shots was like formative for me.
It's so funny.
And I still, and but
God, it's so
and,
good.
And you know what? Parody movies, and here's something I'll point out for here, I'll analyze you a little bit. Those kind of parody movies hit even harder if you're a fan of movies.
You
know what I mean? So for a guy who's like, I love Mel, like love movies in general, and then you watch parodies, you're like, I like comedy, but I also get the reference.
Yeah,
I
get what they're doing
against,
and like appreciate the filmmaking aspect of it. Because like that Hot Shots like sex scene is so funny and
it's
like
so on game.
It's
like
so beautiful and like this like really tasteful sex scene where he's like making an egg on her like
stomach and then
or
he pops the pimento olive out of her belly button into his
it's
mouth.
So funny. funny.
I like, my brothers know Hot Shots by heart.
Yeah.
We used to watch it and they would pause it and just talk about the scene before it happened, then press play and
that's
then laugh
so
the whole
funny.
Time. Yeah. There's a joke in Wrongfully Accused that's one of my favorite jokes ever.
Yeah.
And Leslie Nielsen is like at a woman's house and there's like a dog running around. She walks in for a minute. When she comes back out, he goes, "Your dog has a very unusual face." And you're like, she's like, "That's because you're looking at his asshole." And he goes, "Well, no wonder why I didn't like that treat I gave him." It's like, that's such a funny specific.
Such a good joke. Yeah, yeah. It's so funny. Especially delivered by Nielsen.
Oh, Leslie Nielsen was the king, dude.
Yeah,
Naked Gun movies were so huge to me when I first saw it.
Yeah, yeah, and Police Squad and all that stuff.
Oh,
so.
When you just first see a movie, like if you're into movies and you're into comedy, when you first see a movie that is trying to do nothing but make you laugh, it's a real...
Yeah.
You eventually get over that as you get a little older and your taste gets refined. But there's a phase, I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, I still love them, but like just a straightforward, hard comedy is so fun.
You can really tell with the Zucker movies that there's so much more. Like, you can see them really caring about the structure of it and the nuance of it and the characters. And it's not just a spoof movie. Like, you know, now there's all those, like, Not Another joke movies or whatever.
And
like
the first couple are okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then the last, like,
oh, man.
12 have blown.
Yeah, because it's written by, you know,
20 people.
And people who don't give a shit at all.
Right.
And they're just making, like, weird references and
that's,
stuff and, like, not really.
And that's their
jokes.
Death knell is that they're not parodying Lion. Like, in the Narnia epic movie, they, like, go into Narnia and Borat is there. And it's like,
it's crazy.
It makes no sense
and it doesn't
hold up. But if you're doing a direct parody of Narnia in that moment, you can make so many jokes.
Aspects of
but
it,
then
yeah.
you're like, it's me. Or like Meet the Spartans has like three Britney Spears references.
Yeah.
And when you watch
it,
it's just dated.
It's such a bummer. Yeah. But I mean, I guess it makes their whatever quota of money that they want to make.
Right. That's all. It keeps Marlon Wayans in making money. That's all that matters. Guys, it's early in the morning. I'm about to upload my podcast, and I remember that I have an ad this week, an ad for a company that I use religiously. I literally use this company every day on my most sensitive part of my body. Yeah, I'm talking about Mack Weldon. Holy crap, guys. I wear their underwear every single day. I got it on right now. If you're a bear chaser listening, just imagine I'm sitting in my desk chair in just a pair of Mack Weldon's, form-fitting, antimicrobial, comfortable. The waistband doesn't fold on fat guys. The double X size fits so well. You know how hard it is to find underwear that fits someone my size who has a huge belly, no ass, tiny dick, and thick legs? It's impossible. But Mack Weldon can do it. So if you're out there thinking, I got no ass, no dong, but a big ass belly and Quadzilla over here, then this is perfect for you. It comes in all cool colors. I personally like the silver and not the color silver, but there's a style of underwear called silver, which is very, very nice. It feels good on the bones. And then there's Air Knit, who is like, you know, fucking sweat wicking. Makes you feel like it's the only underwear I'm okay with sleeping in at the end of a day after wearing all day. They have all kinds of shit too, man. Socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, sweatpants. The double XL sweatpants is what I wear on every single cross-country flight because they look like dress pants and they're comfortable as hell. And the socks, dude. I wear the ankle socks, the no-see socks or whatever. That's how you know that the product is good. I pay, you know, they're not cheap. I mean, they're inexpensive, but they're not like, you can get socks for fucking three pairs for a dollar at a street fair. But I wear Mack Weldon premium socks and you don't even see them. That's how much I care about these, like the no-see-em socks works wonders. Holy crap. I just had a couple of sips of coffee and now I'm going crazy. So Mack Weldon's underwear, socks, and shirts, they all look good. They perform. You can work out in the underwear. I know a lot of you guys are like, what are you talking about? I'm like, you ever eat underwear? I mean, I haven't. Who hasn't? All underwear is edible if you try hard enough. No, you know, like when you're working out and your underwear rides up and your crotch just eats like a whole pair? That shit don't happen with Mack Weldon. So do yourself a favor and go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off using promo code Mighty. I'm not even joking. I emailed HeadGum and said, can I use my own promo code? And they said not more than once, but give it a shot. Go in there, type in Mighty, get 20% off, treat yourself to some
underwears, some socks, some t-shirts, some hoodies, some sweatpants, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, hell yeah.
They had, like, really well-done short films on the show.
Yes.
Like, I don't know who directed it. Maybe it was
McCullough, because he's, like, kind of a filmmaker or something. Yeah. But there were these, like, really tastefully done, like, there was, like weird, like, 1984, like, weird dystopian short
like the
films
Max commercial,
stuff.
The Apple commercial type stuff. Yeah.
They made these, like, cool films, and I think that might have been a little bit of a bridge to just like, oh, this is crazy. That
even their normal sketches didn't look like SNL or anything that. You know, it still looked a little more filmic and cinematic. Yeah. It was like, that's really fun.
You thought they were like buffs and that kind of thing.
Right, yeah. And that's why, like, later on, Human Giant and Lonely Island would hit so hard is because their parody game is strong because they're so knowledgeable of the
first
half.
That's
where
they like came up with that stuff. Right. Yeah, yeah.
It's just like
I feel like that's why it's so it's just like you see it everywhere, like really well made comedy shorts and short films
because
now because that's how
film
they were
nuts
raised.
Who
are
comedy nuts.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So then when I got to film school was when all my film friends were like, hey, you fucking idiot. Like, here's a like a good movie. Yeah, here's like all the... Like, I hadn't even seen, like, The Godfather by that point. Like, I hadn't seen, like, anything. Like, Taxi Driver I hadn't seen.
Oh, I had seen all those movies by the time I went to college. But I hadn't seen anything that people would consider, like, real filmmakers have seen. You know,
because
like,
you were more like... Like Big Trouble or something.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I was more like all these action movies. And then I would randomly see a lot of Scorsese stuff. Then like when you get to college and people are like, oh, you haven't seen a Fellini movie or a Truffaut film? Yeah, and you're like, I don't even know who these guys are. Is Seagal in it? I'm not watching it otherwise.
So I kind of had that experience. And like 2 years is enough in film school to like see all those things.
Isn't
and
it really film school really about just like meeting other people and kind of, and you can get that in New York. You can get that in a lot of cities.
Yeah.
Like you got that just being an editor on stuff.
For sure. Yeah. I think if I had a kid who wanted to go to film school, I'd be like, make sure you go to New York or LA or Austin or Chicago or something like that. Like
some place where people are making movies.
Yeah. Where people are going to are serious about doing this. Like don't go to, or at least I like North Carolina School of the Arts. It's like a really good school.
Right.
But yeah, I wouldn't be like go to Maine and go to film school. Like there's little value to
I went to like a school in upstate New York and studied communications. I went to Marist College in Poughkeepsie. Anything at Catholic College.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about like I didn't know I could have went to that's like the only regret I have in life, and my life worked out great. I met my wife there, I got into comedy there, I learned how to edit and make movies there, so I did actually do all the stuff I wanted to do in life.
Yeah.
But the one thing, I just wish I didn't give a shit about college when I was 16.
No, yeah.
And I mean, who does?
Neither, at all.
And I couldn't even, and I'm so, like, my parents were so annoying about everything that I reacted so hard against them trying to help me, like, learn about colleges. When my mom was like, I really like Marist, I was like, I'll go there. Actually, it was two schools. I also liked Siena in Albany, near Albany, and I lost my scholarship to Siena because I got into some shenanigans on the day of the scholarship. I was a scholarship student because I had high test scores, so I went to this for a weekend of all like nerds like who were gonna maybe go to Siena, and I like got in trouble goofing off, and the principal, the dean,
so
took away my scholarship.
That sucks. Yeah.
And I was like, all right, Marist it is. And it's like, even when you're going to college, you could, like, misbehaving can get you in trouble. My mother's face when...
Were you, like, by yourself shenanigans, or did you meet the other two shenaniganers in this
place? Was just all new girls, all new guys around me. I'm, like, new audience. So this, like... hypnotist is giving a speech and I'm like
no
and I'm like, like and I'm like
bait.
Just
That's
openly
bait.
Mocking this guy to like a table full of six people.
Wait a minute.
And these girls are like, you're so funny. And I'm like, this is why I do everything to date.
It's
still
like the most potent form of why you do what you do. You're like making fun of an old person and like women are loving it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, that would literally define my entire path. And then the guy came up to me, like the dean came up to me, he was like, I want to talk to you tomorrow in my office.
Wait,
and I was like, and I was like, totally, I'll be there. And I just didn't go. I was like, fuck this guy. I went out and got shit-faced with a bunch of high school seniors.
Yeah.
Then went to sat in a class the next day, like gave that much of a shit.
Yeah.
And then when the financial aid report came back, my mom was like, oh, I got to call the school. They didn't put your scholarship in this. And they're like, we actually revoked it. My mother hung up the phone. She was like, and my dad's name was John. She was like, John, come down here. And I was I didn't know it happened at this point. And so it's like, she's like, why didn't you go talk to him the next day? I was like, I didn't know he knew who I was. And she's like, you had name tag on. Like, I forgot that the scholarship had name tags on. So I'm like, yeah, I'll be there, man. He's clearly clocking that it says John Gabris.
Also, though, fuck that guy. What a bunch of like personal petty bullshit.
100%.
To, like, see you making fun of a hypnotist.
For him to not go like
scholarship away where you did so much work to like get.
It was insane. My mom, I had to drive. There was like an event out in Riverhead, like a Sienna recruiting event. She made me go and apologize to this guy.
And
I was like,
still didn't work?
It did. I got my scholarship back, but I had already been like a stubborn teen. And I was like, fuck. I was like, mom, I'm not going. I'll just go to Marist.
Yeah.
She's like, no, you embarrass yourself. You have to go. I'm like, I'll just go to another school. Like, I wanted to go to that college after that night, too, because I had so much fun.
I'm definitely
going to Siena. When I didn't get the scholarship, I went. My mom's like, you got to go talk to the guy. I'm like, I want to go to Marist. She's like, no. I was like, no, I'm going to Marist. I just gave up. That's like, you can't let a 16 or 17-year-old kid choose their future.
No. But also, like, it was, they're two equal kind of schools.
It's the same shit, different
Harvard
toilet. I didn't lose something huge, and it's like, now I'll check out Nassau Community.
So you did like film stuff there.
Yeah, I did film stuff there. And like, you know, just the basic entry level classes that they have in like a communications program.
Yeah.
But my the sketch and improv group I was in would do two videos for every show, one short one and then one like full blown short film in the middle, which in hindsight should have been a 4-minute sketch.
But at the time
was 12-minute comedy short films, not the length for a live audience.
Right.
And
they
we
still probably loved it though.
Oh, they loved it. It worked. It was fun.
Like, a video is exciting, especially at that time.
Right.
Just like, you know,
you can do like, and I was doing avids. You could put music or like weird effects in. And then like by junior and senior year, I was directing them, and I was really into it. I had I bought a Sony DV cam with my lifeguarding money, and I was into it.
That's awesome.
And then I was like, this is gonna be what I'm gonna do. And then I just like got a PA job, started performing, people started finding me funny, and I was like, someday I'll do that again. And now I gotta go like the fucking, you know, route where I'm on a sitcom for 8 years, and then I go, can I direct a couple episodes? And then direct a couple episodes of that, and then that's my
right. Well, I think like from my perspective, it seems like the grass or whatever is greener, because I performed in things like earlier on, and then as I got less
more mumbly what are you looking for?
As I got like less validation at like performing, or I don't know, I think I wanted to do directing more. At the same time, I was like getting less interested in performing, and I was just like, oh, these people are really good at performing, I'm gonna like do this other thing that I really like a lot.
I like this a lot, and actually I'm showing some virtuosity in it.
People are validating me in this way more than I've ever been, so you know, in this other way. So it's kind of the opposite way, because I performed more like back in college
with Landline and Captain Hippo.
Bleak. So there's like, you know,
are there any crossover between those two people?
Just Antonucci.
Okay, so he's the one.
He's the best. So I was in a group with
Antonucci. Another Ginzo. Just put him on the list. the names of these people.
Just the beta
Don
Ginzos.
Finelli, Paul Briganti, Mike Antonucci. Get the whole crew together.
Yeah, so we were in a sketch group together, and I directed all those like shorts and stuff like that. You know, but then we did stuff in New York and UCB and did sketches, and then
what was the leap from like for you from like, oh, I'm directing some sketch videos and we're putting it up at a monthly show at UCB to like, holy shit, is this going to be my career?
I think it just always was since I went to film school.
Yeah, that's why you were like, you just didn't know the path to get there necessarily, but you wanted to direct movies, or you were like TVs?
Honestly, at that point, it's just like, goddamn anything. Like I remember there we put a YouTube sketch up, and then MTV show. I think it was like a Nick Cannon show.
Short Circuits with a Z?
Yeah, Short Circuits. Like, they reached out to us, and I remember they were like, we're going to give you like $500 to put your YouTube sketch online. And I remember being like, this is it. Right. This is the thing.
This like, starts like this.
Get in with these guys.
I can make a video a week, $500 a week. Yeah. I can live off that. You're like, the math, it makes no sense.
Just like every opportunity that came to me at that point, I was just like, this is it. This is the thing.
Oh, I've been thinking, I'm still thinking, I'm 35 and I'm like, this is the one.
Yeah.
But when you're first starting out, you really, and
it's
then
huge. Like, it's
as
huge
you get
deal.
Older, when you're doing more shit and you're like, work with someone who's like
fuck you.
When, or like you're like shooting with someone, they're like, I think they're going to bring these characters back. And you're like, they're not. Trust me. It's like, well, now we're in good with the director and this director works out. I'm like, nope, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah, Well,
I'm on year 12. Yeah. Motherfucker slap.
But that Short Circuit show on MTV, like they contacted us and like they had us like re-edit the whole thing without the music because the music was like licensed.
Right.
So I did it. And then like the show got canceled or like I heard it got put on hold. And then I was like emailing them like, hey, are you still a show? And then they just like never responded to me. So that was like the first like hard truth that I learned.
That's a great first lesson. It's oh, nothing that seems good is good.
Yeah. People just stop responding after they tell you everything's is great. And then you'll never see them again.
So that was your first little brush with how the business works.
Yeah. And then
you were editing for the Onion stuff, right?
I was doing like loading and shit like that. Okay. I wasn't like creatively involved at all. But I was like interning and stuff. And then I did a bunch. I worked for this company that made like reality shows and stuff. So I made a lot of like promos for them editing wise. And that's
just
like
cutting down other footage that they had.
Cutting down their footage. They were like, it was kind of fun to be a part of because they were like a startup production company that like had just sold their first reality show.
Oh, cool.
So they were like super pumped and like getting more office space and stuff. And like, I don't know what's happened to them. Hopefully they're still going.
What's the name of the company?
I don't remember. I don't remember. But
I've worked at like so many different reality production companies that I might have been there at some point.
Yeah. So they did a bunch of like trailers for them. And then from there, I kind of early on started Landline, which is a production company that I like a small production company I had with these two other guys that you're in a lot of stuff in.
I've done a handful of Landline videos.
It's sort
some
of
severely weird branded content. Maybe we should take this opportunity to run the listeners through the kind of shit that sometimes you are now have directed your first feature. You have directed numerous episodes of television, several pilots, bunch of short films. I've had a bunch of stuff.
Right.
The thing we shot together at one point was branded content for something I didn't understand at all. Right?
It was you and Darcy, right? It was you and Darcy doing this like, oh wait, you did but they loved your character. You did the thing with Darcy. Yeah, but even that thing I didn't understand.
Like, even the Darcy thing I didn't understand.
You were just talking about data and numbers or something.
I remember this now. We were shooting in like a weird office space.
It was like some office space of like it did us a favor.
Darcy
like
Carden,
that.
Former guest on the Siblings episode and actor in the show Good Place.
Yeah.
But then there was like a second, that company did a second video. Video made no sense.
They were like, we love this guy.
We love this guy. Can we get him on a green screen smashing cardboard boxes? And I don't even understand that. I'm barely remembering elements of it, but you guys had like a Dumbo space at this point?
Yeah, we had a Dumbo a Dumbo Brooklyn office. We kind of were like doing well for what we were doing.
In hindsight, you had no idea. It's like, who can get an office space in the fucking hippest neighborhood in Brooklyn when you're fucking 24 and making just like, we're doing our own thing.
Yeah,
were just doing like production for hire, but for a lot of that branded content.
Yeah, a lot of companies that wanted, there was a weird half boom where companies were just like, I need College Humor, Funny Or Die type viral videos. And
right.
They just kind of came to us and we made like, we were the Penny Stocks and Wolf of Wall Street.
Right.
Like that
it's like, you were like, College Humor costs how much to make a short film? I hear Landline for $800. Well, I let a guy throw cardboard boxes at him.
So you were in this like weird room. I'm pretty sure it was like in the summers. So it was like,
yeah, it was
hot.
So, I remember being insanely hot in this tiny ass studio.
And I remember, because looking back on this, like, I was sort of, I didn't want to do a lot of branded stuff. Like I was just like, I really want to focus on like the fun stuff or like the stuff that makes our brand seem cool.
Right.
But
you also need to pay for a Dumbo
office.
Money,
I know. And the smart guy in the company was like, I think we should do this.
Is this Jordan?
Jared.
Jared.
Yeah.
There's two.
Like,
yeah.
Oops, so sorry. This is okay. And so Jared was like, bless his heart. He was like, listen, we're going to get paid all this money. I'll direct it. I'll do it. You don't need to even worry about it. And I was like, yeah, that's totally fine. Thank you. I felt like I was being kind of a jerk. So I was just like in our office space. All I hear are muffled sounds in the green screen room of you getting some just repeatedly thrown cardboard boxes.
They just people throw cardboard boxes at me, and I had to like smash them and then say something that or I was like, data needs to be organized. Like, I remember it was like the boxes symbolized data. I don't even remember specifics, but it was fucking insane.
It was like one of those metaphorical comedy sketch things, because there were a lot of those that we did, because some PR company, like the only in to comedy was like turning their business into like a weird metaphor.
Right.
So you were like blocking the data.
Right.
Or something.
It was like, this is what happens when someone tries to hack your company. You know, you have to be like, oh, that's like that. That's like 50. I remember branded content videos. Because I got hired to write a bunch of that shit for a while when I was in between jobs.
Yeah.
And it's like, we're a hand sanitizer company, and we want to talk about how sometimes people have to use their elbows or their knees or feet to do something.
Yeah.
So we want to do like a chicken dance video. And I'm like, got it. I'll write you a chicken dance video.
And it's like the steps to get there are so long.
Yeah. And it's like
travel.
And in hindsight, like, and everyone who is a creative will say the same thing, and anyone who's an executive will disagree. But it's like, just make a really funny sketch, and at the end of it, just say
the brand
Lexapro.
Yeah,
exactly. like, just do it. Like, like that's the best way to get any of that shit done.
Yeah, because the kind of it just was weird. Like, they didn't get it. It just gets watered down,
right? And then people are like, "What am I watching?" And I'm not watching it anymore.
Yeah,
I'm gonna shut this off.
The only thing I remember specifically that you had to say was one of the executives made you say we were on a break from Friends.
Oh my god!
And you were like, "This guy wants me to say we were on a break." Like, that shit, that episode aired like 20 years ago. No one knows like the context of what this is.
And it doesn't make sense for the scene where she, oh man.
Yeah.
And those were the like, fucking salad days.
But that is the thing you do, you got to do when you're like,
right.
When you're making stuff that you want to do.
Yeah, you know, I would imagine when you're a doctor, you got to do like residencies. When you're a salesman, you got to go door to door or cold call.
Yeah,
when
for
you're
sure,
a stock.
Yeah.
There's like the fucking shit. A lot of people think you go from like film school to like you make your first move. Like, some people are lucky enough that they do get to make like their a first feature out of college being financed somehow. And but a lot of us,
but even
have
after
to
that, even after you make like people, if people make a movie out of college, like I'm sure like Todd Phillips or whatever, who had like success pretty early on, has done some fucking stupid like commercial things. That
he didn't commercials
want to do.
Specifically.
Yeah. Like,
I mean, directors
does
do
it.
Have to do like for real commercials.
Yeah,
to stay alive.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, especially at that level, they make like a ton of money.
It's like worth it to
it's
shoot.
Not just like to pay your rent. You do these commercials.
Right. You do that commercial to put your kid through college. Yeah. When you hear like David Fincher is directing like Adidas commercials, you're like, holy shit. God only knows how much money he got.
Yeah.
Someone who's like openly anti-consumerism. God knows what fucking
what
bitter pill,
for.
What it took to swallow, what spoonful of sugar it took to swallow that.
Yeah. Like,
oh. Fuck! I need to direct a commercial. I need to be in a commercial. I need to find. I could kill for a branded data packet conversation right now. So then, after Landline, you got so. Now, for you, do you? That's cutting your teeth. That's grad school. You're making so many short films and so of assorted levels of quality or even interest on your part.
Yeah.
But to like, at what point did you start to like? Because I know you eventually would make some shorts, right? That are just like purely creative.
Well, I started working at College Humor and then with those other guys from Landline.
Right. Then, you guys got hired as like to do all that stuff. And then you were directing for those guys.
Yeah,
for
I was directing for them. And then while I was there, because we like part of going to College Humor from Landline, we just kind of like ended the company because we were like, oh, we don't need it really anymore.
Right.
So we
now you just hired as three employees.
Yeah. So I had some just money, so I just like spent it all on a short film.
Oh, nice.
So
which one was this?
It's called Speechless. It was like it was with Antonucci. Mike Antonucci's in it. It's about a guy who has to give a wedding speech for his like two best friends who are getting married, but he was like sort of always into the girl. So he like kind of lost touch with the dude.
Oh, cool. I haven't seen this one.
It's fun. It's like a very like it's a, you know, sensitive boy, like beta boy kind of short. Perfect. Which is sort of my style.
Yeah, that's your wheelhouse for sure.
So I did that, and then nothing really happened with it, but it was fun to do.
Right.
So then I made and you learned more shorts.
The shit you learned making one short. Yeah. Where you're like, all right, well, let's never shoot really indoors in August. Yeah.
Like even doing College Humor stuff for a while, the stuff you learn making your own thing, the narrative thing is so much more than
right. Even you for shot some reason 40 I don't know sketches why.
Yeah.
A year, if not more, for fucking College Humor. And then when you go to make your own short, it's still not the exact same skill set. Right?
Yeah, because it's way lower budget even.
Yeah,
and you're just kind of you see it in a different light. So it's good to just do all those different types of things. Because College Humor, I learned a shit ton too. But like I learned things at College Humor, like working with like a big crew, whereas like shooting a short, I learned like how to tell a story and stuff.
Right,
like that.
Right. But with College Humor, you're like, oh, this is what this department does. Okay. I can get them to do this.
Oh, yeah. I'm not allowed to touch this thing.
Right, yeah.
Or I'll get yelled
at. Yeah, that's the one thing I always loved about College Humor is that it was prep for a professional
set. Yeah, for sure, yeah.
Like even as an actor, it's like, that's the one thing Reich instilled over there was that it's like, we're a production company. No one is making money.
Yeah.
But well, not no one. Some people are. But they're not on that set that day.
Yeah.
They take it seriously and it has like the same high. It's like a little mini army where it's like, you're a tiny general. And you have your.
And like, to Sam's credit, he like lets directors. He gets a lot of joy out of like filmmakers like
getting to direct.
Doing their thing, which is really cool. And like, not a lot of. TV shows, things like that let you do that
for sure.
And
that's like
and
the big thing everyone says about directing TV is that you're pretty much just like
especially
a
like
gun to come in and
if
execute.
It's like a later season especially then you're just kind of like
right it has
not
a
fucking it up is your job
right
you
right.
know. That being said, I'd love to do any any episodes.
I would love to not fuck up your show if you're listening. Andy but, Samberg.
But yeah, so that's kind of where I like earned. I feel like I earned my wings a little bit in like filmmaking, and then I made another short here with George Basil and Adam Lustig and Stephanie Allen, which is really fun.
I loved.
Oh, thanks.
I saw that one. I love that one.
Thanks,
man. I like those three people a lot, but it was a fucking gorgeous.
They're so good. Yeah, they're so funny.
I never really worked with Steph until like
she's so good.
Whatever she does is. I mean, those three people are all great actors. Period.
Yeah,
you can just tell because. Basil is in everything.
Yeah.
Lustig is in everything. And Stephanie is in a lot.
Yeah. She's in such like amazing things. But she has a really good way of like being like sarcastic and like sort of scary, but like also being
but
super
also
warm.
Sweet. She's
She's great.
Fall in lovable with like because of her ability to be like, but do you hate me or like me? Yeah, and I don't know, but I gotta earn it.
But like only on screen, like in person, she's
right.
Like
in person,
a very
she's like
warm,
a real sweet,
actual
quiet
nice
person.
So then I as I was doing that, I did like pilots and stuff. And
right.
You
directed a few episodes of TV too, right? Like you did.
Did
you do Adam Ruins Everything?
I did the pilot.
Oh, right.
The first like six episodes of Adam Ruins Everything.
And did you do another pilot for those guys too?
I did a pilot called Middle of the Night Show for MTV.
Oh, which they also did a few episodes.
For Sam's, for Big Breakfast and College Humor, which is like the College Humor's company.
Yeah.
That was like a one season thing, but that was really fun and crazy to do.
Yeah,
it was like one of those crazy late night MTV shows in New York.
Yeah. Fucking great.
But
then all this shit builds to you directing your first feature, right? And so let's talk a little bit about Village People.
Sure.
The documentary you made about Village People.
It's funny because it just played at a festival, but before that, it was like, if you Google it, there's no fucking chance.
Yeah, you're going to be so far down the SEO. Yeah. I named my movie is called Google. Figure it out. You should be able to find it online.
It's called How Much Is 1 Pound in Liters?
It's great. Honestly, there is an iPhone repair place right by my house called LA iPhone Repair near me. It's really called that.
Oh, man.
And it's literally like it auto completes and you're like, oh, yeah. And then it's like, oh, wait, this place, I guess.
That's kinda really funny. Near
it's
me.
Like the ultimate
I
search
like
engine optimization.
Yeah. That's smart.
So tell me a little bit about Village People.
Yeah. So it was, I don't know. I'm sorry. The mumble.
No. Did you don't judge it? Now I put you in your own head. Monster. Yeah.
I wanted to make a movie. That was like one of the main things because I felt like I needed to make a movie.
Forgive me if this is overstepping, but like, do directors like, you can do all the shit you want in the world, but you gotta direct a movie at some point. Is there some sort of thing behind that, or can someone be a TV?
I think that was more just my own insecurity. Yeah. So I was just like, I need to make a feature film by the time I'm 30. That was like this weird self-imposed thing. And myself and my friend Dan, we wrote this script about these like guys who go down to Nicaragua, sort of like a Y Tu Mama Tambien, but like just kind of more inept, like just goofier sort of thing.
Oh, awesome.
So like a less cool and like, but still indie type of movie. So it's about these two guys who go down, their brothers-in-law, and they go down to Nicaragua, and they sort of just like, they go to this place called Mercado Village, which is based on this real hipster retreat boutique hotel in Nicaragua called Madera's Village.
Had you been there previously?
I'd been there, yeah. I went down there.
And you were like, or you knew, like, when you went down to Nicaragua, were you like, I want to shoot a movie here? Or were you like,
No.
Nicaragua and like, I got to shoot a
movie
here.
Yeah, I was just there. And I was actually there to like get inspiration to like what to write this thing. And I was just like, this place is hilarious. Cause it's literally the hotel of like just the most beautiful sun-kissed white men and women from like Toronto and Los Angeles and Brooklyn in the poorest country. It's like the poorest country in Central America. Yeah. And like all these, like they have these videos of like all these like hot girls doing yoga, and they're just like, they're like, Madera's Village is like, it's unity and it's like peace and stuff.
Oh, it really feels like Total Recall type shit. Like a fake commercial
like
for
like a
something.
Weird propaganda for this.
Right. But where everything's okay here.
And you go,
while we don't have water, feel free to get sparkling bottled from
that. Well, that's the thing. Like, that place has all this stuff, and it has like all these mixed drinks and really good food, but like you go like outside of that oasis and it's just like the dustiest, dirtiest, like poorest place, but like all those people outside of this place are still really cool, all the local people who like live around there. So yeah, it was just kind of inspiring, and the people who inspiring in like a funny kind of condescending, you know, if I wanted to like kind of make fun of that whole thing.
Take the piss out of it, if you will.
So I just came up with a story, and it revolved around that place.
Oh, that's so. So you went down to Nicaragua. This is the most exciting part, because we started working together sort of right after this happened. We knew each other before, but we started working on our MTV show together.
Yeah.
I think you were in post, or we discussed it before you left.
Yeah, it was right after we shot, because we shot Pick Me Up in like the May or something, right?
Right, yeah.
I remember Doug sent me the script when I was down there.
Right. And I was like, oh, what's he doing? He's doing a feature film in Nicaragua.
You had a great
cast too, right?
Yeah, it was George Basil we talked about.
Yes,
I worked with Aya Cash on
the Workaholics guys movies, and I said to her, you know Briganti.
That's awesome. Yeah. Aya's great. She's awesome. Like, I didn't know her before she came to do it.
Right.
So to like trust someone enough to like go to Nicaragua and the movie was a really low budget too.
Right.
Like it would have set off flags in your head if you didn't know me. Like
you would have
been like, this is a budget.
Yeah.
It's in Nicaragua. I don't know.
I don't know about this. Right. Exactly.
Yeah, like how
but then it's one of those things where you like look at, you see one of your short films and you're like, okay, this guy seems to have a good idea.
Yeah.
Let me talk to some people that know him.
I worked with him.
He's great. He's not a sketch.
He's not weird. Yeah.
You've earned your reputation
at
this point.
He's not stealing Con Ed bills or whatever.
Right.
He's not of that guy.
He's not caught yet. So like that'll get people to show up. It's like the guy's talented.
Yeah, I guess so.
Like, and you earned all that by fucking hard work and not being a creep to people. You know what I mean?
So,
but that's just wild to like.
Yeah.
First feature out of the country. like that's such an insane move.
I think it was just one of those double down moves where I was like, you know what? Like I'm just kind of circumventing the process.
Right.
Just so that I didn't have to. Because you see there's so many movies that go through the regular way of like you send a script to agents or to whoever, and it like actually how like our friends Dan and Doug did it, and right. they completely did it like
they did they
legitimately
shot, they did
and
it right.
well.
Yeah,
and
they made an indie movie.
They got like a couple million dollars,
right?
Which is fucking amazing,
right?
Where I was like, I'm not gonna go through the whole rigmarole of that. Like, I'm right. just gonna like do it for very little money.
Did you get like financing like from friends?
Yeah,
or, like,
no.
Or
there was
this, there like a dude who wanted to?
There is. Yeah, there's a dude who like I don't think he would. Be mad if I said his name, but I don't know of that.
Yeah, yeah. So
like,
don't bother.
So,
yeah,
yeah, I feel like you could just look in the credits and figure it
Paul
out.
Paul Manafort, Rex Tillerson. You took like blood money just to make a fucking indie film. he would be mad because he's the leader of the Boko Haram. But you know, you got it. Hollywood's
yeah,
a dirty town, bro.
You know?
That's really funny.
But yeah, he's just this a friend who just gave me like a lot of money in terms of a person giving you money, but in
right.
terms of
not
like,
a
movie,
not to make a movie,
the
a lot
tiniest
of money.
Amount of money, like right. everyone that I've told is just like that's the amount. That's crazy. Like it's like under 200. Grand,
which is crazy,
especially out of the country,
right? You got to fly people, you can't
the flying ate up like a lot of the money. Like once we were there it was like a dollar for everything. It's so cheap down there, but you gotta fly people there, which sucks, but,
and they gotta stay at like a reasonable hotel agent
like oh my god, no way.
You stay, we got 9 guys to a hut here on the beach in fucking Nicaragua. I'd be like, get me the fuck
just
out
like
of here.
Yeah, like you always hear like I think I was at a Q&A for some like indie movie that I didn't make. And the director was like, yeah, we like made it. And it was like, great, real camaraderie. We like, I'll stay in like a house. And it was like so fun. And I'm just like, no, that like you see the reality of that in your head. And you're like 4 people to a floor.
I know. And you worked with them for 14 hours. One of the stories I always go back to on that is the Workaholics guys, when they made their first like season or two, they were living in that house that they were shooting in.
Oh, shit.
Like a couple of them were.
Oh, my God.
And they would like wrap and like leave C-stands up and then just like go lay down in their bedroom. Or like if they were done shooting, but the other people were shooting, they would be like in their bedroom while a show is being shot.
It's really interesting and funny how like until something is like a bona fide success, it's a complete destitute kind of thing,
right? It's like, so true
with like
TV
pilots,
shows too, like even like network TV shows are like we don't get lunch, we can't get lunch, we can't get crafty. Then season two it's like we have sushi chefs here every day.
It's like flip, it just happens like
The network's like, all right, here's an extra $500 million.
Yeah, it's like okay, you guys are actually making money, sure. That's so funny. So yeah, the people came down and we Adam Ruins Everything have like just wrapped, and so a lot of department heads were like, yeah, I'll fucking go to Nicaragua. And
oh cool, and you had worked with these guys and they're like, I don't have anything lined up. A movie shoot for 30 days, right? How many days less?
It was just like 20 maybe.
Yeah,
but we made it like we really gave them their weekends, and you know, I didn't go over a certain amount of time every day. Like I really wanted to like make it worth their while at least for like going down there.
Like, if you're going to come down and do this with me, I can't overwork you too.
Yeah,
I can't really beat your ass. So it's called Village People, and hopefully it'll be out in some capacity shortly.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So people should go check that out.
Yeah.
I want to talk about working with you as a director, because it was fun. We had a really good time. You talk to other people like adults, which is huge. And it was a weird dynamic because we were acting in it and writing. Me and Betsy and Dan and Doug were creators and actors, and so we had some, like, you couldn't come in and take over either.
The
working, like, I was like, I like the guy, I've worked with him a handful of times, and then when after that, I'll do whatever you want to do in perpetuity, because that was like
a
fun fucking experience.
Okay, cool.
And it was really cool. And like watching how you handled other people and seeing how like he has not even it's like 110 degrees in the High and Mighty Studios right now. Briganti hasn't broken a sweat. He's just been grinning ear to ear this whole time. He's the fucking goofiest, nicest dude. But once or twice I saw you have to like alpha on set,
which
I didn't know if you were capable of.
Oh, wow.
And I saw it once or twice and I was like, oh, I'll go to the end of the world now.
Because
you are so sweet and so talented, and it's like, that's a given, but it's like, you can easily get walked over in this business too. But I just watched you and I was like, oh shit, he is
truly prepared for this. Thanks, I wanted to give you that compliment because it was.
That
like,
means a lot. Thank you.
You can watch your movies and know you're good, and watch your shit and know you're good at it. You can work with you and know you're good at it. But then it's like seeing you deal with bullshit was real. And the couple of moments when you would actually like tag, because I love to just openly joke, complain about everything.
It's so funny. Like the Comtex with the headphones that we had connected to your guys' body mics. Like there were there were times where me and Dan and Dick would just like look at each other because you were saying like the craziest fucking things
about
openly.
MTV people that are sitting like in the row behind
you.
I'm
and
like,
fuck it, they passed us. Fuck
right?
Them.
Yeah, no, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah,
and but that's how I act to even my closest friends.
Even
so,
if they didn't.
So I'm gonna be like that all the time.
Yeah.
But it was like when you would like walk over to set to me and Betsy and then like just say some shit. I'm like, oh, I like this guy a lot. When he's like, yeah, these assholes want us to do whatever. I was like, yeah.
Yeah. It's like a it's fun. I find that aspect of it like it's a weird game thing to play where you just are really balancing so many aspects of people's personalities. And I don't know. I love doing it.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite things to do.
I say this a lot about acting, but I think directing even more. It's like there's so much shit that goes into being a good director that has absolutely nothing to do with directing.
Yeah.
That you don't realize. Like to be an actor, you have to like know how to do taxes and like how to interact. In like you could be the best writer in the world. You can write the most perfect screenplay, but if you can't talk in a meeting, you'll never work in this.
Yeah, it's
like,
true. It's
and
a
if
weird
you could
gate.
Have the best eye, the best this, but if you can't handle a
it's
note,
so true.
You're fucked. Like, and it's like those are skill sets that don't overlap that much.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I feel like they fuck a lot of people out of this world, or they like, you know, people deal with it and they're like, fuck, I blew that meeting or something.
Right,
and
then
you
gotta
to
learn.
Rebuild and figure it out. Yeah, there's a lot to that, especially doing stuff with notes, you know, because when you're younger, you're, you know, like producer notes or whatever, or just like balancing certain things. Because the way I think about it is when there's producers there, you're like, okay, you're here for a reason, one reason or another. So obviously you matter and you've gotten this far. So like, let's like talk about it. And if I don't agree with something, I think like the way to do it is just like be like, I wasn't thinking that, but like, why wasn't I thinking that? Like, let's try like turn into a discussion.
Yeah.
And
I love that. And that's like kind of where I'm at. Like you learn that. And I think, you learn how to be like, the end result is let's make a fucking movie.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I understand that you need me to do a few things.
Yeah.
I'll take 45% of what you're saying now and I'll put it in.
Yeah.
What's the note behind the note?
Right.
How can I
can
I give you my feedback?
Yeah.
But as if it's your idea.
Yeah.
like that's
a
the best
non-threatening way
right.
that like seems like it's coming from the right place. And
Yeah. If you can make your new idea that's either a compromise or just another angle seem like it comes off of their note, you can fucking work forever in this world.
Yeah. It's funny. It's a lot of like weird trickery stuff that you don't really realize is trickery consciously.
Right.
You're just trying to get what you want in there without like completely like making a show of it or anything.
Yeah.
Being like too.
And it's
proud
so
of it.
Like you got to learn how to like just do that. Like, and you're like, oh, I got to learn how to talk to different types of people. Cause like, you can, they don't teach you in film. I mean, I guess you learn in film school making films, but you don't teach you in film school. It's like, hey, if the person in charge of the hair and makeup department is kind of like this, then you don't want to come at them like this.
That's not something
you can pot. That's psychology.
Yeah,
it's like,
that's really
you
true.
Have to like learn how to deal with it. It's like, okay, I can get like rough with the sound department because these guys talk like that. This art guy talks. I can't really. I gotta like be kid gloves with this person.
With this person.
Like,
well, especially with like coming into shows too, like SNL and like even like other shows.
we blew past your most quintessential credit, the one that would get most that most people have heard of, and we're like Adam Ruins Everything
this,
and this obscure short film Landline branded content.
No, but I don't. That's not why. I know.
I'm just saying for my own sake. This is. Yeah. I just want the audience to know how unprepared I am for all of my interviews. But yes, Briganti is currently working as a director for the film sketches on SNL. That's so funny. That I did not bring this up.
This is better.
Yeah, I know.
It's just for your own. Yeah. I think that's the charm of your podcast, too. Yeah, it's like,
how did you not ask him about it? Yeah, just like get like Will Ferrell in here and just talk about Daddy's Home.
Movie did pretty well.
I can't wait to see the sequel with Mel Gibson. How crazy is that? People are just giving him chances still.
Yeah, it's too quick.
Beats all. The guy's actually a very good director, too.
Yeah, well, with Passion of the Christ, Patriot, obviously Braveheart, right? Did he direct that?
No, I don't think he directed that. Okay. No. Apocalypto, he directed.
And then what was
the most recent movie he just directed?
The one with Andrew Garfield?
The
Army one, right?
The Army one. What's it called? I forget what it's called. But he's
I still think it's too soon, though. It's too soon.
No, it's his. He should not be allowed back in this. Yeah. He's got to do some sort of penance.
Yeah, he really does. And the beaver's not enough.
No, it's not enough penance. I don't mean like a movie penance. I mean like you have to do like, I've donated to the Holocaust Museum or something.
For sure.
I mean,
like if we can kill Billy Bush because of like a weird.
Because
gross,
of what Trump
like,
doesn't even get fired.
Yeah, exactly. And like he's dead. He has to donate all his severance to charity.
Right.
People still hate him. Mel Gibson.
Yeah. If you can catch a football, you can punch a woman in the face and make $1 million the next year.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
The shit we put weight on is insane. Yeah.
Like at SNL and also like when you come into like episodic work, when you're coming into season 2 or 3, as an outsider director, you don't even have no one knows who you are.
Right.
So the makeup person or the hair person, like there's everyone has way, they know, they all know, like the, like I,
they've done 40 more episodes of the show than you have.
And they all have a camaraderie and a language that they speak to each other and understanding. So like,
and you got to learn it in the 5 days that you're there.
You have to learn it in the 5 days and you want to really just like get a lay of the land, but like you have to get a lay of the land as you're doing it.
Right. So that's a really weird. Yeah.
So and it's an interesting like way to learn something, but you also like kind of have to call the shots when you're on set too. So you have to be this like balance of an authority, but also be like, oh, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. Like this is your ring, you know.
Right.
Like,
but you have to then when called upon, be like, no, this is what I want.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was some of the fun stuff about we're so deep in here?
Yeah,
but we'll wrap it up soon. But
what
was some of the fun stuff? Because SNL was your like most recent job after we did our MTV pilot together. You went to SNL, which was awesome.
Thanks.
What was that like? It was just like
it's fun. I mean, it was like it's
they're doing
an
videos every
place.
Week now.
Yeah. Like the only thing that's crazy is just the schedule.
Right, the video has to be done by Saturday.
Yeah,
no matter what.
Yeah, like I don't think a lot of people know that you literally shoot it on Friday. You shoot the thing on Friday, and then you edit it on Saturday. So like that's the crazy thing.
Wait, you're shooting most of the videos on Friday?
All of them, yeah.
Why Friday? Is because like they have the day free before rehearsal or whatever.
Because Tuesday that's when they write. Wednesday is when. They read them.
There's a
big read through.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Thursday, you need some time to produce it. So, say it's in like a castle or you need a set build or whatever. So Thursday is when all that shit happens.
Oh, shit. And then Friday you shoot.
And then the rewrite's happening as you're producing it. And then Friday is when you shoot.
And then you're
in
an editing bay all day Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah. With the editor and with the writers usually. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's fucking wild.
Just kind of like putting it together. So that was the only thing that I didn't have experience in. It's just that.
But you have you probably didn't have that specific experience, but shooting sketches for Friends is like, we have to.
The landline
shows on Tuesday.
Yeah.
You know, like, it just has to be done.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing that.
And even College Humor shoots are like.
Yeah.
Sort of like fly by the seat of your pants.
Well, yeah. Like, Landline was like this deli owner that we're paying $50 says we have to get out of here in a half hour.
Right. Exactly.
The new that is like. You know, this celebrity or whatever, this host needs to get out of here to go rehearse something in 10 minutes.
Right.
So you're
going to get, when Tracy Morgan walks on, we're just going to get everything we need.
Everything's ready. Yeah. And then you get what you need. You don't really waste time, but you get what's cool about this, about SNL is that they really, sort of in the same way College Humor does, they really want their shit to be like sort of artsy and
they want it to be filmic
and have like auteurship smell on it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So which
that's
is
true. Like
really
you can
fun.
Tell like the Lonely Island stamp on like a sketch. It was like you know.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
What were the other guys? Matt and Oz who came next.
Yeah. Matt and Oz. Yeah. Oz is still there. And then the Good Neighbor guys.
Oh
Dave
right. Right.
And
yeah.
Kyle and all those guys. Yeah. So like yeah they really like I feel like they respect the whole like filmmakery kind of like aspect of the
whole
thing.
That's really there's a famous story from one of my idols who we talked about before we went on, Adam McKay.
Yeah.
When he wanted to leave SNL, his agent was like, why don't you just ask for an insane raise? And then if they say no, then you can leave. But if you get it, then you can stay.
Yeah.
So he went for a meeting with Lauren and said, I want whatever this big raise is, I want to shoot on film a sketch every week.
Yeah.
And I want the title Director of Falconry. And Lauren just went, okay.
Yeah,
and he got all three.
Yeah,
and
there
are some episodes of SNL that says Director of
Falconry,
Adam McKay.
McKay.
Yeah, that's
so
fucking cool.
Yeah,
he likes that. He has a bit of an auteur. Like, he's crazy with movies.
Yeah,
and
he's
stuff.
Like, he made like Three Amigos and shit. And like, I think he has like a soft spot for like directors and
say
and
what you
artists,
will about whatever
you know?
The machine SNL has become. Lauren cares about artists. He's always bringing in like maybe they don't work on the show, but he's always like, this is a singular voice.
Yeah.
Let's see what happens.
He'd like to his credit, like it can easily get lost and like it seems like, especially in the stuff I do.
Right.
It's like a very
oh, and it must be kind of cool
thing.
Working with the same actors all the time, right?
Yeah,
it's sort
it
of like
cool.
You have like a weird company where it's like,
yeah.
Here we go again, Keenan.
It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a weird little like traveling.
Yeah,
or
that's what's
traveling,
always fun about College Humor is like, oh, hey, Luke Scholl's here again. Like, it's the whole gang. We're getting everyone. Oh, and we need an old guy. Will Hines will be in the sketch. You know, fat guy. We got Gabrus, you know. It was always a good time.
Then they moved, but then everyone else moved. So
yeah, then we
okay.
all just followed.
That was just like a slightly skinnier everyone.
Right.
Like more tan. More salad eating, Will Hines.
Before we wrap up here, what was your favorite sketch that got out on that ended up airing on SNL? What was your favorite thing that you did?
There were two things that I think were like maybe the bigger ones that I really had a fun time with. One of them was the one with Casey Affleck, the like Dunkin' Donuts thing.
Oh, that's
where he's
great.
Like a towny Massachusetts dude. Yeah, that was really fun.
That's
to,
really
to work
fun.
On. Streeter wrote that one. Streeter Seidel.
Oh,
Mikey
cool.
Day.
College Humor. Film.
Yeah. And then this other one I did with.
Did you do pizza rolls?
Totino's. Yeah.
Yeah,
I say,
love
yeah.
that.
Thanks,
sketch.
Man.
I
yeah.
love that.
With Kristen
sketch.
Stewart. Yeah, that was really
yeah.
fun.
Yeah.
That was Sarah Schneider from College Humor and Chris
Jesus,
Kelly.
They're all there.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I know. It, that is like a really cool thing that like there's so many College Humor people.
Right. Well, it like, makes it's the job that College Humor trains you for, whether you want to admit
whether
it or
they,
not.
They like
if you're
it or
cranking
not,
out
yeah,
10
yeah.
sketches a week, no matter how good they are, just to get it, that's like you're building the skill set for SNL.
It's really true. Yeah. College Humor and Funny or Die. I mean, Funny or Die, like whatever. Even more so probably because of their connections.
Topicality and connections and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. But.
What was you going to say the other one? I jumped the gun.
That was
with
the one.
Oh, it was?
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah,
because that was a really great one.
Yeah. That was like, I feel like that was fun because it was I got to do the most like film fuckery.
Genre.
Yeah.
Like, it was like got
it was
to
a
do
commercial that turned in, turns into like a beautiful
like softcore.
Like a blue is the warmest color, kind of like
it,
beautiful lesbian.
It was like
thing.
Kind of hot and it's a Totino's pizza commercial. Yeah, pizza roll commercial.
Yeah,
and it was kinda hot. So
that was so fun. Yeah, that was a really
I highly recommend checking that out. I also highly recommend checking out. Are your short films online if people want to check it out?
Yeah, they're all online.
Yeah. So what would they? Yeah, Speechless. And what's the one with Lustig?
Speechless and Donald and Jess.
Donald and Jess, yes.
And I think those are it so far. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, and then check out Village People if you see it on demand or however it's coming out.
Yeah.
When if you have CISO or Vubu or whatever. And Paul, what's your Twitter if people who are struggling filmmaking?
I don't have Twitter.
Smart. Get out of there.
I have Instagram, though.
Okay, what's
it's
your Instagram?
Paul Briganti.
Paul Briganti.
Yeah.
Paul, thank you so much for coming on High and Mighty. This has been
thanks
so
for having
fun,
me.
Dude.
A lot of fun.
We are at an hour and 29 minutes.
Oh,
I think
was
we just needed to catch
hour?
Up too, and we abused it a little bit. Sorry to the listeners, but hey, you got to get to the end. We got to talk about SNL. I almost fucking dropped it. I'm at John Gabrus on Twitter. I'm at Gabrus Picks on Instagram if you want to tag me and and Briganti and your favorite movie quote picture. I don't know what I'm talking about. Buy a shirt at gabrus.com/shirts. Go see The Little Hours in theaters now. I have a little small part in that.
and Action Boys on Patreon. And I feel like there was one other plug. Oh, go outside, get some vitamin D, hit the beach, hit the surf, get your fucking dick wet, get your pussy wet. that's how I'm spiraling. I'm at tapped for time here. Goodbye, shitheads.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.